I'm Tracy Sable tonight on EWTN News Nightly. Extensive damage. Helene brings flooding and dangerously high winds to the southeastern United States. Middle East conflict. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu speaks to the United Nations General Assembly almost 1 year after the war with Hamas began. Apostolic journey. Pope Francis is welcomed in Belgium as he addresses several topics relevant to the faithful. And seeking God through art. We talk with a Catholic artist who creates sacred art for homes and churches. These stories and more tonight.
From EWTN, the Global Catholic Network, this is EWTN News Nightly.
Thank you for being with us. Our top story tonight, Helene continues to lash the southeast. High winds, flooding, and deadly storm surge. More than 24 people are dead in 4 states and millions without power.
It's eventually going to lose strength. We've already seen it weaken. But even though while it's been weakening, there's still significant dangers to be aware of, tornadoes and so on. So people still need to be very careful.
Well, Helene may be weakening now, but as a Category 4 hurricane making landfall, it packed a punch. Along with high winds and driving rain, it also brought lightning. Power lines popped all over Florida. Millions of residents across the southeast are without electricity today. The incredible storm surge led to serious flooding and high water rescues. In South Pasadena, Florida, responders came across a residence on fire and large objects, including dumpsters, moving through floodwaters. It is unknown if people were in the home. And once the sun came up, residents in Treasure Island found boats piled up on their front lawns. While Helene entered Georgia as a Category 2 hurricane, one homeowner described her experience with a storm.
I just felt the house shake, and then I told my husband he didn't feel it, but then I got up and I saw the damage that it had done.
A towering oak tree outside the house smashed through the roof of an upstairs bedroom and collapsed onto the living room below. And as you can see, some heavy flooding covers some of the streets in Asheville. Up to 10 inches of rain has already fallen in North Carolina mountains. Forecasters are warning that the flooding in the state could be the worst observed in the past century. All right, now we bring in Kim Burgo, Vice President of Disaster Operations at Catholic Charities USA. Kim, thank you so much for being with us today. This is all so unbelievable, all the damage and destruction. And I know that Catholic Charities launched a disaster relief donation campaign in order to help those impacted by Helene, not just in Florida, but all across the Southeast. Tell us more about that and what has been the response so far.
Yeah, I mean, right now the storm is still very active and our Catholic Charities agencies are doing assessments across their dioceses. This storm, as you've mentioned, starts in Florida and just keeps going up the United States. We are helping agencies, the Catholic Charities agencies and dioceses along the track of the storm. Certainly, if folks are interested in helping, you can go to CatholicCharitiesUSA.org, or you can text hurricane to number 20406, and folks can help there. Right now, that's the best help that folks can provide, because certainly there are so many in need.
Yeah, absolutely. Kim, I know it might be a little too early to tell, but how will some of these funds that are raised, how will they be used to help those in need?
Yeah, initially they'll help folks get some needed supplies, groceries. When the electricity's out, your food in your refrigerator goes bad. Clothing. There are certainly people who have had floods and their clothes are no longer useful. Household items. So these kinds of things are some of the immediate things. While it's good to supply hygiene kits and items like that, they don't resolve the problems that exist in real life. They only serve as an immediate solution at the time.
Yeah, and these are things that people need right now, too. I know you're in it really for the long haul with everybody, helping them out. Talk about that and the recovery efforts. What's going to be needed there?
Yeah, you know, it starts out immediately with certainly people getting over the shock of this and taking assessments themselves as to what's happened and what do they need to fix and repair. And replace in their own life. And then certainly coming to a place like Catholic Charities where case managers can help them create a strategy for the long term. Catholic Charities does not go away after the immediate storm passes or even after it's off the media circuit. So Catholic Charities is there for the long haul. And we like to say we're in the community for the life of the community. And many of these Catholic charities have been in the community for many, many years, and folks know that they can go to them and trust them with their needs.
Kim, out of time here, but quickly, I know you mentioned off the top, but can you just give us that website again for those who want to help?
Yeah, CatholicCharitiesUSA.org or text HURRICANE to 20406.
Kim, thank you so much. Thank you for all that you do. God bless you.
Thank you.
All right, now to the 2024 election. We are back on the campaign trail tonight. Donald Trump and Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky sit down together for talks. Trump said Zelensky asked for the meeting at Trump Tower in New York. And Vice President Kamala Harris travels to Arizona with a plan to visit the U.S.-Mexico border. White House correspondent Owen Jensen reports.
The White House says Vice President Kamala Harris would receive a briefing on efforts to disrupt and stop the flow of deadly fentanyl at the U.S. southern border. Immigration and border security are, of course, top issues in Arizona. Meanwhile, Donald Trump and President Zelensky, who were not originally scheduled to meet, did in fact meet face-to-face, discussing the war in Ukraine.
At Trump Tower, former President Donald Trump and Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky, his nation still at war with Russia, stand side by side, ready to talk.
And we're going to have a discussion and see what we can come up with, but great honor to have you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Thanks so much, Mr. President. Thanks so much for this meeting.
Their meeting comes as public tensions have been rising between the two over Ukraine's defense against Russia's invasion. Zelensky warning Putin can't win. And Trump telling reporters,
It has to end at some point. It has to end. He's gone through hell. This country has gone through hell like few countries have ever, like it's happened anywhere. Nobody's ever seen anything like it. It's a terrible situation. And I will say I've had a great relationship.
Just yesterday, Vice President Kamala Harris, who also met with Zelensky, said her support for Ukraine is unwavering. And at the same time warning,
there are some in my country who would instead force Ukraine to give up large parts of its sovereign territory, who would demand that Ukraine accept neutrality.
Today, Harris flew off to the southwestern United States, her first visit to the U.S.-Mexico border since becoming the Democratic presidential nominee. Heading into November, the border, one of her biggest vulnerabilities. Trump has an edge with voters on migration, and Harris has gone on offense to improve her standing on the issue and defuse a key line of political attack for Trump.
Just 39 days until Americans select a new president. And this weekend, Trump is holding campaign events in Michigan, Wisconsin, and Pennsylvania. Harris, in addition to Arizona, visits California and Nevada. At the White House, Owen Jensen, EWTN News Nightly.
While on the heels of Ukrainian President Zelensky's visit to Washington, President Biden announced a new $8 billion aid package for the country. But the trip also stirred up a lot of controversy among lawmakers who are divided about Ukraine funding. Capitol Hill correspondent Eric Rosales has that story. Eric?
Good evening, Tracy. The new money announced by the White House this week now brings the total amount to almost $60 billion that the U.S. has provided to Ukraine since Russia's invasion 2.5 years ago. Some on the Hill are shouting, when is enough enough?
They can't win this. I mean, they're looking for a stalemate. They're looking for a draw and looking to work their way out of it. We have done a poor job. The Biden administration has done a poor job of negotiating or trying to negotiate ourselves out of this.
Other senators signaled support for Ukraine regardless of the political fight.
I think it's good that he's come, and I think it's important for us to continue to find ways to support the Ukrainian people in their fight for democracy.
The war in Ukraine needs to end, and Russia needs to be expelled from the country. So I hope it ends soon. But we've got to provide him what he needs. And you don't win a war by being on defense.
Adding Zelensky should be allowed to use U.S.-supplied missiles deeper into Russia.
I support the idea of being able to use long-range missiles to hit legitimate military targets deeper in Russia. I think that put pressure on Putin to end the war.
I fully support if they want to advance the frontier of the distance that those our weapons can reach into Russia. I think it's bringing their fight to them. I think that's inappropriate.
During President Zelensky's U.S. visit, he went to a U.S. arms factory in Pennsylvania, accompanied by Democratic lawmakers paid for by the U.S. government. No Republicans were invited.
I'm surprised that President Zelensky decided to go to campaign in Pennsylvania, the middle of a general election campaign in the United States. That was extremely ill-advised, extremely partisan.
House Speaker Mike Johnson wrote to President Zelensky saying the trip was, quote, election interference designed to help Democrats, and demands that he fire the Ukrainian ambassador who organized the trip. Oversight Committee Chair Congressman James Comer is now investigating the trip. At the Capitol, Eric Rosales, EWTN News Nightly.
1 year after the Hamas attack on Israel, the Latin Patriarch of Jerusalem is calling on the faithful to participate in a day of prayer and fasting on October 7th. Cardinal Pierre Battista Pizzaballa has been a tireless advocate for peace in the Middle East. In a letter, he notes that the Hamas attack on Israel has, quote, struck a profound blow on the region. He urges the faithful and world leaders to commit themselves to peace. And that attack plunged Israel into a war with Hamas and battles in Lebanon. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu spoke about it at the United Nations General Assembly. He asserted that his country will be taking the fight to Hezbollah so citizens in northern Israel can return home.
As long as Hezbollah chooses the path of war, Israel has no choice and Israel has every right to remove this threat and return our citizens to their homes safely. And that's exactly what we're doing.
Netanyahu brought attention to the ongoing hostage situation in Gaza, calling on Hamas to release them in order for the war to stop. Shortly after his speech, massive blasts rocked Beirut. The Israeli military says that it carried out a strike on Hezbollah's headquarters. The blast leveled six buildings. Lebanon's health ministry says more than 700 have been killed in the country this week. And joining us now is Mary Ellen O'Connell, professor of law and international peace studies at the Kroc Institute at the University of Notre Dame. Mary Ellen, great to have you back on. As in years past, the Israeli prime minister came equipped with visuals. He held up two maps showing what he called the blessing and the curse. Could you explain what that meant?
Well, the world heard those terms for the first time. They have no legal meaning. It was just part of the prime minister's rhetoric to try to get support for his ongoing policy of using military force to try to resolve the security issues that plague Israel. And Israel is plagued by security issues. There's no doubt about that. October 7th was a terrible, terrible violation of international law and human rights. But we've seen after a year, almost a year of war, that the problem is escalating, not getting better. I certainly am in full support of what President Biden and President Macron of France tried to do, which was create a three-week ceasefire, certainly with Lebanon, and really support the chance to negotiate and create an alternative to using military force for Israel's security and for the good of all the people in the region.
Netanyahu also denounced the United Nations General Assembly as a swamp of anti-Semitic bile, as dozens of diplomats walked out in protest ahead of the speech. He slammed the mountain of international criticism of Israel's offensive in Gaza. Our global leaders, are they starting to lose patience with him, do you think?
Well, global leaders have already lost patience with him. Israel has very few friends. Really, the United States is the only country that is standing by Israel in a meaningful way, in that we are the only country sending offensive weapons still to Israel, despite what the international community, the International Court of Justice, the International Committee of the Red Cross has said has been abusive uses of force, targeting civilians, not exercising caution, using starvation as a weapon. Only the U.S. is standing by Israel. And from what I'm reading about the White House's response, its reaction to Mr. Netanyahu's very aggressive speech at the UN today, is that maybe the U.S. is finally losing patience, too. We worked very hard on our diplomats worked very hard on the ceasefire, the 3-week ceasefire plan, and it was just rejected by Prime Minister Netanyahu at the UN today in a fiery speech. So it's really difficult to see why Mr. Netanyahu made such an aggressive speech.
We have about a minute left or so, but quickly, we know that shortly after the speech, the Israeli military said that it carried out a strike on Hezbollah's headquarters in Beirut, targeting leader Hassan Nasrallah. Do you think an all-out war with Lebanon, do you think it can be prevented?
Yes, war can always be prevented. We, in the Catholic Church, believe always in peace. We are always hopeful. We are always praying for peace. Peace is the right answer. If the United States will use its leverage to ensure that there is a ceasefire and diplomacy, we as Catholics must be behind that. We must believe in peace. The just war doctrine, which is the origin of today's international law regulating the right of any state to use military force in self-defense, has a doctrine called necessity. And it says even if you have a right of self-defense to use military force, that must have some purpose. You must be able to gain a defensive result from killing. If you're killing for a vain purpose, only for revenge or reprisal, that is unlawful and immoral. I believe we're at that point with Israel's policies toward its neighbors, the Palestinians and the Lebanese.
All right, Mary Ellen, thank you so much for weighing in. Appreciate your time.
Thank you.
All the military escalation between Israel and Hezbollah could impact participation from Lebanese church leaders at the Synod on Synodality. With the second session beginning with the opening mass on Wednesday, representatives are expected to arrive in Rome in the coming days. However, most airlines have canceled their flights to Beirut, even as Beirut International Airport remains fully operational at the moment. Locals fear that it could become one of Israel's targets. If that were to happen, Eastern Catholic patriarchs would not be able to arrive at the Synod on time. And we have a lot more still to come here on EWTN News Nightly, including Day in Court. The New York City mayor appears in a courtroom following his indictment on federal charges. And Pope Francis takes the next steps on his apostolic journey in Belgium. It is a historic moment for New York City, but for all the wrong reasons. Today, Eric Adams became the first sitting mayor of New York to set foot in a courtroom as a criminal defendant. Adams pleaded not guilty to 5 felony counts. The charges include bribery, wire fraud, and accepting improper gifts from Turkish businessmen and officials. Prosecutors said in return, Adams did favors for the patrons. The judge released Adams on his own recognizance. Well, today is the second day of Pope Francis's apostolic journey to Belgium. The Holy Father addressed the clerical sex abuse crisis in the country and the importance of Catholic universities. EWTN Vatican journalist Rudolf Gehrig has more.
Last night, Pope Francis landed in Belgium, the second leg of his apostolic journey, where he was greeted by a delegation of religious and civil authorities. This morning, the Holy Father paid a courtesy visit to the King and Queen of Belgium before meeting with authorities and representatives of civil society. In his address, Pope Francis confronted the Catholic Church's long-standing clerical abuse crisis in the country and emphasized that the Church must seek forgiveness for its failures.
Brothers and sisters, this is our shame, the shame that today we must confront and beg forgiveness and resolve the problem, the shame of abuse, of the abuse of minors.
Before his visit, the Holy Father announced plans to meet with 15 victims of sexual abuse by clerics, which he did today privately. While Belgium is a traditionally Catholic country, it has become one of Europe's most secular and progressive nations in past decades. It has also become a global destination for those seeking euthanasia, which was legalized in Belgium in 2002.
church here faces topics like euthanasia, the discussions about climate change, the right of women, and those are the discussions that are ongoing in politics, including the church. And an end of those discussions is not to be seen.
The main focus of Pope Francis's trip to Belgium is to mark the founding of the oldest Catholic university in the world, the Catholic University of Leuven. The institution is home to one of the world's leading theology faculties. In the afternoon, the Holy Father met with professors at the Dutch-speaking school and asked them to make academic and cultural formation a critical space that both understands and speaks about life.
Cultural formation is never an end in itself, and universities should never run the risk of becoming cathedrals in the desert. They are, by their nature, driving forces of ideas and sources of new inspiration for human life and thought, and for facing the challenges in society.
Over the next days, Pope Francis will visit the Catholic community of Belgium, university students, and his brother Jesuits. On Sunday, which will be the last day of his visit, Pope Francis will celebrate Mass in Brussels Stadium, where more than 35,000 faithful are expected to attend. In Brussels, Rudolf Gehrig, EWTN News Nightly.
On EWTN News Nightly, some sunshine for your soul, an inspiring story of a Catholic living out her faith in a remarkable way. Well, finally, on this Friday, we end our newscast with some sunshine for your soul, inspiring stories of Catholics living out their faith in remarkable ways. And we kick off our Feel Good Friday series tonight with an artist who draws her inspiration from the divine creator. Ever since Blair Barlow was a child, she knew she wanted to be an artist, but not just any artist.
So as a sacred artist, I paint for churches and homes, creating, you know, whether it's biblical scenes, images of saints, just trying to make these different mysteries or aspects of our faith more tangible for the faithful to pray with and to celebrate the liturgy in the context of a space that's adorned with these images.
Barlow, a cradle Catholic, says she always felt inspired to be an artist, but it was her liberal arts education at the Franciscan University of Steubenville that helped to solidify her passion and hone her craft in a way that art school couldn't.
I think it was detrimental to my formation as a Catholic, and that prepared me to become a Catholic artist by just giving me a great foundation in the Catholic intellectual tradition. So I received a Catholic liberal arts degree, which helped just form the way I thought and interpreted reality, especially looking back just on the different ways that the Catholic Church impacts culture.
And she saw that impact firsthand in Florence, Italy, where she attended art school after graduating from Franciscan.
And everywhere I looked in Florence, there was inspiration. You know, that kind of setting that was so impacted by Catholic culture, and that informed all of the sacred arts. It was just a wellspring of inspiration. To me, it just was this, it was so formative, and these artists represented kind of the heights that one could reach.
After a few years, Barlow took that inspiration back to the United States and settled down in her home state of Louisiana, where she spends her days raising her family and creating art, including paintings and drawings of Christ, Our Lady, and the saints. But there is one she has a particular devotion to, Saint Joan of Arc.
But all of a sudden, it was, she just kind of presented herself to me, it felt like, because I started getting, almost every single commission request that I started getting was for a Saint Joan of Arc painting. So I had, I think, four in a row. And through that, I had this opportunity to grow in friendship with her
Growing in friendship with the saints, the Blessed Virgin, and Jesus Christ through her art is something Barlow has seen others experience as well, and it's transformative.
It's just been this beautiful experience when the work is installed and blessed, just to see the community it's made for interact with it after, you know, maybe a month and a half, 2 months for these bigger pieces of me just working on it every day, praying with it, thinking of the people it's intended for.
And what a God-given talent she has. And to see more of Blair Barlow's story and how she creates artwork through her connection with Christ, check out the show Artful, an art documentary series streaming on BYU TV. And you can also go to her website, blairbarlowart.com. We thank you for watching tonight. Remember, you can follow us on social media, Facebook, X, and Instagram at EWTN News Nightly. I'm Tracy Sable. Good night, and God bless.